Happy Saturday. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. So we have a big show today. You know, I have been thinking, you know, the dot theory, pull in all the dots. They try and separate, confuse, distract from, delay, and put them all kind of on one piece of paper. And I'll let you connect the lines. But I think I've come up with a rather scary set of dots. A rather scary set of dots. And I'm going to go down each of them. So the show today is going to be, number one, some relatively bright lights, if you will. Some facts you need to know on immigration, what's going on in Congress, etc. And then finally, what I think is really going on with Iran. Iran's nuclear bomb, the Obama administration's active role in the development of Iran's nuclear arsenal, and I will see once I lay out all these dots, and boy, they're not all of them. This show's not long enough. But once I lay out this major set of dots, we'll see if you come to the same conclusion I did. It was kind of an epiphany that I had in thinking about this, given the recent, shall we say, absolutely obtuse, completely incredible, unbelievable display of the refusal to call Taliban terrorists, which we'll talk about a little bit today too, and give you some facts which most of the mainstream media, there is some, have not brought to light. In fact, it's my understanding that the three main channels, ABC, NBC, CBS, they haven't even talked about the Taliban thing, the Bergdahl thing, the refusal to call Taliban terrorists. I mean, that hasn't been on the news yet, at least not as of this broadcast. It's remarkable. Let's start with the good stuff first, shall we? Number one, the Senate did pass the Keystone Pipeline, despite Obama's threat of veto, one of nine threats of veto that he's issued without even seeing legislation. But he's going to work with Congress. Okay. And he has the middle class at heart, and he loves America, and yada, yada, yada. So here's where we're at. Keystone Pipeline is passed. Obama is likely to veto it. It only passed with 62 votes. That means six Democrats voted with the Republicans to pass it. To override a presidential veto, you need 67 votes. So there's going to come a time here in the future, folks, where I'm going to exhort you, as I'm sure many others will, to pound five Democratic senators who are on the fence to vote to override Obama's veto. Because the Keystone Pipeline, and by the way, that all kind of ties in to my theory of dots, which we're going to get to later in the show. I think you're going to find it absolutely fascinating. It'll give you an entirely new perspective and outlook on what is going on. It did for me. But then, of course, I'm just a poor old hayseed in Wyoming, and what the hell do I know? The second thing, which has, shall we say, is kind of a bright light, but it's a two-edged sword, is that gas prices, as you probably know, are way down. But remember that, you know, there's a yin and a yang to everything economic. For every action, there is a reaction. For every movement in a market, there is an opposite movement. People don't make or lose money out of thin air. If you make or lose money, it comes from somewhere else. In other words, when a stock goes down and you lose money, somebody else was betting that stock is going to go down, and they're making money. Because money is it's a constant thing. You don't create money in a transaction. You're using money that already exists. I hope you're following this. So in gas prices, yes, they're down. Yes, it adds 16 to 20 billion, depending upon the economist, to the economy. Yes, it saves you all sorts of money and you're running around. Yes, that gives you more money to spend on other things, which is one of the reasons retail sales have surged this month to their highest level in 8 years, which is a good thing if you're not a believer in savings. It's a good thing. So you have all these good things that low gas prices do for the economy. It attracts industry from other places because low energy costs is a good thing. And if Obama would ever get off his butt and make good on his on his promise he never intends to keep of reforming the tax code and getting the United States corporate tax rate down from the highest in the world at 35% to something in the 20 to 25% area, you'd see all sorts of foreign industries, particularly with what's going on geopolitically in the rest of the world, flooding to the United States and all sorts of new jobs. But as we've discussed in the past, that's not really his motive at all. But the other thing that low gas prices do is that they dampen new exploration, which is very expensive. They dampen new drilling, which creates lots of jobs. Just ask North Dakota and Wyoming and the other oil states, Texas. And they put a lot of small energy producers, wildcatters, and others in jeopardy. Because, you know, most small businesses, I don't care if you own 5 oil wells, or whether you own a car dealership, or whether you have a bake shop, or whatever you do, most small businesses don't have a huge amount of capital. They have to borrow money. They have to have investors who put in money. The owner has to put in money and a hell of a lot of time. And it's really kind of a shoestring operation if you look at the big picture. Very few small businesses are debt-free. Very few small businesses don't have some type of investor, even if it's mom or dad or, you know, the wife or whatever, that don't have a role or stake in the business. And it's put all these small oil-related businesses, the guys who supply pipe, the truckers who haul the pipe, the water people who bring the water to the fields, the sand people who dig the sand for the fracking, the guys who build the pipe that is needed to do wells, okay, the folks who own the drill rigs. I mean, it's a huge list of folks that the oil and energy industry employs. And most of them are not ExxonMobil. And what you're seeing is, I'm seeing it here in Wyoming, you're beginning to see some significant layoffs in that field. And you're beginning to see homes not selling. And you're beginning to see the other attributes to a slump in a market that you would see on many different levels. So, and by the way, you know, people forget that markets go up and down. So somebody who is getting gas revenues, let's say they got a gas well on their 20 acres or on their ranch or whatever, they were planning on that income. And I guarantee you that most people have already spent it years in advance of receiving it. And now that income has been cut by at least a half, maybe more. Not to mention the company that's running your gas rig, if it's a small company, might be in trouble. So the checks are late or don't come. There's a ripple effect here that is huge, that is not being talked about, which is the opposite. It's the yin to the yang, if you will, of what's good about gas prices dropping. Anyway, two-edged sword there. The third thing that I want to say is positive is that the Article 5 Convention of the States, it's my understanding, I'm going to check on this and let you know next week, they have now picked up their 38th state, which is what they need to convene an Article 5 Convention. I talked about this 3-4 shows ago, to make amendments to the Constitution from the bottom up. Remember, constitutional amendments, because of the wisdom of our founders, can flow from the top down, In other words, basically Congress and the president come up with the amendment, the states have to ratify it, or it can flow from the states up. So it's this is kind of exciting, as long as it doesn't get hijacked by the progressives. Because this might be a chance, even though it's going to take time to evolve, to make some necessary, to armor plate the document that the progressives and the progressives allied with Islam is in the United States, which is undeniable, what they want to tear down. So I think that's a pretty cool thing. I'm going to keep you apprised of that. I'm going to let you know how you might be able to get involved. There's a delegate process. There's a hearing process. There's a comment process. This is a huge deal. This could affect the grandchildren of your grandchildren of your grandchildren. And, of course, it could affect you, too. All right. Those are the positive things. There's several others, but, you know, they're rather minor. And I don't really care about who deflated the football. I mean, that is so distractive that I just can't get over it. I mean, the world's falling apart at the seams. We have all sorts of problems. And half of the newscasts on the major networks are about who deflated the football. It's really remarkable. The brainwashing is almost complete. Let's talk about Iran, the nuclear bomb, Israel, Obama, Jarrett, and their minions, along with radical Islam, Islamic extremists, and terror. Shall we? I think that the United States and all of us as Americans, we're at a crossroads now. We're at many crossroads right now, but we are at a crossroads of energy independence or continued reliance on the Middle East. We are at a constitutional crossroads. We are at an economic crossroads, i.e. regulations, etc., etc. Tax, you know, all the things that go into the economy. And I think we are at a security crossroads. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about Russia because I forecast what they're doing. Here we go in Ukraine. That's heating up. You're going to see Putin moving on other fronts because he has to get the price of oil up. Remember all the effects I talked about just a few minutes ago to these small companies in America? Which, by the way, is one of the reasons the OPEC countries, such as Saudi Arabia, are keeping prices low by pumping more oil than they need to. They know how it works. These guys are not stupid. And what they're trying to do is disrupt this explosion in American oil production. Because they know that 90% of the companies out there are small companies that can't survive an extended downturn in oil prices. I mean, it's dastardly clever, actually. So, we have... Let me give you the dots. Because of all the things we're at a crossroads of, security, in my mind, is first and foremost. They may be all equally as important in the long run, but let me tell you, unless you're alive, it doesn't matter. You can't be free if you're dead. You can't be hungry if you're dead. You can't support the Constitution if you're dead. You can't enjoy an economic recovery or weather an economic downturn if you're dead. This is kind of basic common sense. So first and foremost comes security. Now, it's long been my contention that the security of the United States is not the concern of Barack Obama and his minions. We're not going to go there. This is an even bigger picture and more frightening. We've been given the charade over the past more than a year now of negotiations with Iran over their nuclear program. Now, if you look behind the curtain, diddly squat has happened, except that we have given back between 7 and 10 billion. You can't get the numbers. Even though it's your tax money and your government, you can't get the numbers. We've given back 7 to 10 billion that was being withheld from Iran through sanctions. We have relaxed sanctions on a regime that was tottering on the brink of economic collapse. And we have allowed the centrifuges not only to continue to spin, but new ones to be built. Time is their ally. It always has been. There are links that my producer has posted. I urge you to get these books, please, and pass them around after you've read them to as many people as you can. There's the book that was written by the current Iranian president back in the early 2000s when he was a chief negotiator on the Iran nuclear program with the West. Read that book. In his own words, you will hear about how time is their ally, how he gloats over how he tied up the negotiations while the centrifuges were being built at that time, and how easy it is to build nuclear weapons if you can stockpile 3% enriched uranium, which is exactly what the Iranians are doing now. I mean, literally, we're talking weeks or a month or two. Read his book. You don't have to listen to me. You don't have to listen to the lies of the administration. You don't have to listen to the pundits being cued on TV. Read it from the Iranian president. And by the way, all the links are used books on these books because you don't want to ship him one dime of your hard-earned money. Ship it to somebody who's already bought the book. The second link is Dreams from My Father. Yes, that's right. Barack Obama's book. Once again, the link is for a used book because we don't want to ship Barack Obama one penny of our hard-earned money. Read Barack Obama's book. Don't take my word for it. Don't take the pundits' word for it. Don't take the lies that come out to try and cover it from this administration. Read his words, particularly the sections that refer to Islam and Muslims. The third book is, and we've posted this before, is Saul Alinsky's Handbook for Radicals. Once again, a used version. We don't need to send any money to his estate either. Read that book. This is from a great progressive mind, which is an oxymoron, on how to bring down the system, how to lie, and how to get away with it, and how to move progressive ideals, communist ideals, forward, which is being employed by the current administration, I might add, not only to move communist ideals forward, but Sharia law and Islamist fundamental ideas forward. Read those three books. You will understand far more. It's always better to listen to the words of your enemies than to listen to the words of pundits trying to describe the words of your enemies. So let's start with a dot, shall we say, on this theory of mine, which kind of popped into my head. As I was looking at all my stuff for this show, I kind of sat back and had an aha moment. Number one, these are absolutely incontrovertible facts. Valerie Jarrett wields enormous power in the White House. Many say she's really the president. Regardless of whether she's really the president, Barack Obama and Michelle Obama do virtually nothing without her inclusion, without her sage advice. I think when these Benghazi hearings come out as a sidelight, this is not a fact, this is surmise, that Valerie Jarrett is the one who gave the stand down order. We'll see. So Valerie Jarrett was born in Tehran, Iran. Valerie Jarrett, the negotiations with Iran, absolute fact, began in the nation of Qatar. Now you've heard Qatar in the news. They're holding the Taliban Five. They're holding other prisoners. And holding is a very loose term. You've heard the uproar this week. I'm not going to go into it with the Taliban guys calling their Taliban buddies in the field, probably saying, in 3 months, I'm coming home. What can we do to screw things up? There are shady articles. And when I say shady, I mean they don't have all the facts, not that they're incorrect. That the person who began the Iranian negotiations, which began in Qatar, 2+ years ago, was a woman. Now, there's not a single woman in this administration, and we know where Hillary Clinton was at the time. It was not her. There's not a woman in this administration with the savvy, the smarts, or the power to begin negotiations with Iran other than Valerie Jarrett. Valerie Jarrett began the negotiations with Iran through Qatar. And you've noticed the propaganda coming out right now about how Qatar is so cool and they're our friends and all this stuff. Qatar is scum. They, you know, the enemy of my enemy of my enemy of my enemy is my friend. And, you know, this is not a trustworthy country. I might add, neither is Saudi Arabia. They're trustworthy only in a relative sense compared to Iran. Okay, so these negotiations begin. Now, Iran was called by Reagan and called by Bush the largest sponsor of terrorism in the world. That's a fact. More money is given by Iran to terrorist organizations than by any other entity, person, or country in the world. Absolute fact. Iran was designated a terrorist state. The Taliban, follow me on this, the Taliban was designated, despite all the lies, and I got to tell you, I'm very disappointed in this Pentagon spokesman. I'm very disappointed in him. An admiral, no less, taking an oath to uphold and defend the Constitution, and I can tell he's uncomfortable and he doesn't like it, but you know what? Anybody who stands up and lies to me, I don't care whether it's through a camera or face to face, I have no respect for them. So we have the entire government now, from the White House spokesman to the White House to the spokesman for the Pentagon to the State Department, saying the Taliban are not terrorists. The Taliban are enemy insurgents, militant insurgents. And, of course, we have the entire, I'll tie this in for you in a moment. Just follow me on these dots. We have the same group of folks saying Iran is not a terrorist state. Iran needs to be welcomed to the table of nations. We have a president who has threatened to veto sanctions, which will be passed by the Senate, and have already been passed by the House, against Iran, which would not come into effect. They're kind of a reinstatement of the sanctions, and even tougher, that the White House unilaterally and unconstitutionally dismantled. And he's already threatened to veto it. He hasn't even seen it. It doesn't even go into effect unless the so-called negotiations break down. But he's going to veto it? That's a dot. Now, let me tell you the actual status. Pursuant to the United States government itself, of the Taliban. There are two terrorist lists that are kept. Well, there's probably more, but there's two primary ones. One is kept by the Treasury Department, and one is kept by the State Department. The Treasury Department clearly lists the Taliban as a terrorist organization. Period. Black and white. End of story. So all these talking heads on TV, these progressive spokesmen, who like their progressive masters, can't utter the truth, who talk about they are not designated as terrorists, are flat lying to you. They are designated as terrorists on the Treasury list, period. They were declared terrorists by George Bush, the then commander-in-chief, in 2002. Last time I checked, the commander-in-chief is the commander-in-chief of the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, you name it. The Pentagon. Instead, we get this dancing around. Oh, well, you know, they have terrorist acts, but they're really enemy insurgents, blah, 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 blah. I mean, it makes you just, it's disgusting. The same game is being played with whether Iran is a terrorist state. Why is this being done? Besides the fact they're habitual liars. There's three reasons. This is all part of the dots, folks. Number one, the United States has a policy, quote unquote, of not negotiating with terrorists. Well, you can't negotiate with the Taliban, give them back five of their top generals, which is also about Guantanamo Bay. We're not going there today. And get back your deserter Bergdahl, who you didn't even bother to check was a deserter. Because it wasn't about Bergdahl, folks. It was about getting the Taliban back to the Taliban. That's what it was about. And closing Gitmo. But mostly it was about getting those five top Taliban generals back to the Taliban. They wanted to do that. Did you know the Taliban is an ally of Iran? Another dot. So, we have this display of intentional confusion, obtuse comments, diversion, distraction. Read Saul Alinsky's handbook. So that we can deal without getting the American public completely pissed off that we're negotiating with terrorists, with Iran and the Taliban and others, because they aren't terrorists. You follow me? You can't deal with a party if they're a terrorist, so you have to say they're not, even though your own lists say they are, and the President of the United States has declared them so. Once you can open the communications with these people, you can get all sorts of nefarious things done. Particularly if you're aided by little old Qatar. Because Qatar is not for the West. Qatar may not be for ISIS, but that's only because they're Shiite. And ISIS is primarily Sunni. A whole other wrinkle in Muslim radical behavior. All right, let's go to the next dot. Hopefully you get that. With these lies, they can now open direct communications, which they keep secret. Hell, we haven't even seen the written agreement that was drafted up to extend the negotiations a year ago. They won't even give it to the American public or the Congress. So, Hezbollah and Hamas, who torture Israel with all sorts of terrorist attacks. I think there were three this week, including several Israeli soldiers killed and wounded, are backed by Iran. Another dot. The relationship between Israel and the United States is very shaky. And it's completely through the acts and lack of acts of this administration, including Barack Obama, read his book, particularly the parts about Muslim stuff, and Valerie Jarrett, born in Iran. another dot. Then we have the uproar, meant to be distraction, of Netanyahu being invited by Boehner to speak, the White House being all sorts of out of sorts, or pretending they are, about it, not wanting to meet with Netanyahu, who they have stubbed many times in the past, a dot. And then we find out, although most of the news channels won't carry it, that Obama operatives, including his top kind of ground game general, the get-out-the-vote general in his 2012 election, is A, working for the opposition party in Israel against Netanyahu in the upcoming elections 2 weeks from now. The opposition party, by the way, is pretty much an appeasement party in Israel. They are to Israel what the progressives are to America. And number two, we have the spectacle. Now, I wouldn't call it the spectacle. We have the really interesting wrinkle that the State Department, on one hand, of course, the administration is using as an excuse, as they always do. They always find something. For not meeting with Netanyahu when he's in town. Maybe they have some bubble bath interviews, who knows. In the meantime. For not meeting with Netanyahu while he's in town. Because they don't want to get involved in Israeli politics just several weeks before a big election. Really? But one of your top operatives is over there working for the opposition progressive Israeli party? Let's thicken the plot. Absolute fact and another dot. The State Department gave $200,000 in the form of a grant to a group. I'm not going to bore you with the names because you won't remember them. You can Google all this up. To a group, just put in State Department, $200,000 to Israeli group. I'm sure you'll get a bunch of articles. And they aren't mainstream articles either. Gave $200,000 to this group who turned around and then funneled it to the opposition party for whom the Obama operative, ground game general, is working. That's another dot. The opposition party in Israel wants to take a much softer stance toward Iran. Another dot. Obama does not want Netanyahu speaking to Congress because Netanyahu is going to lay down the line on just how dangerous this Iranian thing is, what will happen if Iran gets a nuclear bomb. Another dot. Everything else is subterfuge. Everything else is confetti to confuse. That's the real fear. That Netanyahu will change minds, and that there will be a veto of the Iranian sanctions, which are going to be passed by the Congress, that will be overridden by a couple of votes because of Netanyahu's influence in his address. That is what's really going on here, and it's another dot. Because with those sanctions ready to go in place, the whole little plan that I think these dots point to, you connect the dots, folks. I'm just telling you what I think. I'm giving you the facts. You draw the lines. Let's go into the next dot. Libya. So Libya, it's now come out that Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama and Valerie Jarrett were the folks who pushed for Libyan intervention over the Pentagon, over the CIA, you name it, all of whom said, listen, Gaddafi's going to step down, there's nothing going on, there's no mass genocide, we don't have to do this. They went in instead and decimated Gaddafi's army and the government's protection forces. And what we have in Libya right now, besides Benghazi, what we have in Libya right now is a failed state which is being literally consumed by Al-Qaeda. I'm sorry, not Al-Qaeda, but by Shiite rebels. Shiite rebels. Iran is a Shiite nation. The rebels, I wouldn't call them rebels, the terrorists in Libya, who are now basically controlling the country to the point there is control, not anarchy, are funded entirely and armed by Iran. Then we have Iraq, which is a Shiite nation. We know that there's a mess there. And we know that Iraq has now become, this is a dot, an Iranian satellite, if you will. And that happened because we pulled out all our troops, and not we, Obama pulled out all our troops and refused to sign and complete a status of forces agreement, which he now uses as an excuse. We've talked about this before. We now have 2,000 guys in Iraq with no status of forces agreement. But we couldn't leave anybody there because we didn't have a status of forces agreement. Think about it. Another dot. Syria. Here's another dot for you. So Syria, the insurgents there are Sunni. And you can call them insurgents, terrorists, I don't care what you call them. The guys who are fighting the government are Sunni. The Free Syrian Force, which is the conjure of the Obama administration, you know, the 5,000 men that they can't find, that they can't train, that are going to be in battle against ISIS and the Syrian government that they started 2 years ago and are at least a year away from, if ever, getting armed and back in the fight. They are Shiites. And the insurgents, if you want to call them that, in Syria are Shiites. I'm sorry, are Sunnis. I mean, it's rather confusing, excuse me. Are Sunnis. In other words, the guys who are kicking the government's butt over there are Sunnis. The army, 5,000 men, that we're training and equipping with American dollars to fight the insurgents and ISIS, which is Sunni, are the enemies of the Shiites. Iran is a Shiite nation. Syria is a Shiite nation. Who is Iran's closest ally? Syria. Another dot. Here's the bottom line. Iran is extending its influence with the use of the American military, for instance, in Libya, to many nations in the Middle East. They are purging Sunnis. They are lifting Shiites. They back Shiite militias and terrorists everywhere. So do we. Did you know that the United States has sent money to the Palestinian Authority, much of which is knowingly funneled to Hezbollah, one of the terrorist arms of Iran, and Shiite against Israel? Let's give another dot. You don't have to Google much on this. Just put Iran, threats against America and Israel. Pick any combination of words. Google it. You can listen to what the Iranians, from the Ayatollah on down, the past Iranian president, this Iranian president, you name it, what they have said about the great Satan America and the little Satan Israel. And you can listen to their avowed intent to wipe both of us off the face of the earth. Listen to their words. Wouldn't it have been nice if somebody read Mein Kampf back there in the 1930s when Hitler wrote it and said, wow, this guy is telling us what he's going to do. Boy, could have been tens and tens and tens of millions of lives saved. You know, when somebody says they're going to punch you in the nose, Their fist is rolled into a ball, and they've drawn back their arm. Probably they're going to punch you in the nose. All right. That's another dot. Al-Qaeda is primarily Sunni. ISIS is primarily Sunni. Iran and their Shiite forces are enemies of and fight and try and undermine Al-Qaeda and ISIS wherever they can. In other words, in their play for Mideast power, they don't want to be competing with the Sunnis. The Sunnis are their enemies. Whether or not they all come together in the end, because the enemy of my enemy is my friend, remains to be seen. Let's do another dot. We're being diverted from this threat to our security. Let me back up. You probably saw the news reports, which were brief seconds on just a few channels over the course of the last 2 weeks, but you can Google this up. Google up Iranian intercontinental ballistic missiles or Iranian long-range missiles. You can see the pictures. Pictures don't lie. The Iranians have now developed, with the help of North Korea, an intercontinental ballistic missile, which some experts say has a range of 1,200 miles. Israel's 1,000 miles away. And some say have a range that could reach at least the coast of the United States. In any event, there's agreement that they are not far off having a missile which can reach the United States. Let's tie that into another dot. Iranian influence in Cuba, remember what Obama did in Cuba, and in Venezuela, in this hemisphere, which would put any missiles they might place here. Remember the Cuban Missile Crisis, folks? It's not going to take on a double head, Iran and Russia. Russia already has a sidelight. Russia already docked last week. It's almost not covered at all anywhere. Their top Russian spy ship in Havana Harbor, 90 miles from our coast. They can listen to everything that's going on in the United States. In addition, Russia has announced plans to open military bases, and I guarantee you there's going to be missiles. And we don't have Kennedy in office. In Cuba and Venezuela. And I guarantee you Iran is going to do the same. Now, why would Iran, here's another dot for you, why would Iran be building an intercontinental ballistic missile? This is not a missile which puts people in space for scientific exploration. This missile is built for one thing: to leave Iran or wherever and to land somewhere else. And if it was just for defense, it doesn't have to have a range of much more than 1,000 miles. So why are they building a missile with a range of 2,000 to 3,000 miles? I don't think this is hard to figure out. Listen to what they have said they're going to do. Here's another dot. Dial up the 12th prophet. Google it up. The radical brand, terrorist brand of Shiite Islam practiced by the mucky mucks in Iran. Is kind of the 12th, I'm going to make this really simple, is kind of the 12th prophet brand, which believes, I'm going to sum it up, you read it for yourself, that Islam can only triumph and they can only get to heaven by A, killing infidels, and B, in a huge world conflagration, ultimate war. Once again, I'm not making this up, folks. Google it up and read it for yourself. When you put all these dots together, you overlay the United States under all sorts of excuses, using its military to pave the way for Shiite takeovers of countries, delaying, stalling, and giving away goodies in this nuclear negotiation, including allowing the centrifuges to spin, read the Iranian president's own book. And you couple it with this administration's refusal to label terrorists as terrorists so they can negotiate direct. They're sending top people, the five Taliban generals, and top, we'll call them extreme terrorists. They just released, it was in my show 3 weeks ago, a nuclear terrorist from Guantanamo. Now, what would a nuclear terrorist be doing at the time we're negotiating with Iran over a nuclear bomb? I wonder. There are no coincidences. So, you connect these lines however you want, but here's where I can, and this was my epiphany. This is not just a laissez-faire attitude on the part of our administration. This is not just, as many of these idiots on TV say, incompetence or denial or this or that or the other. No. This is a concerted effort, brilliantly conceived, using the assets, including the military assets of the United States, to ensure that Iran gets the bomb. And to ensure, may I dare say it, the eventual destruction of Israel and the likely severe damage to the United States and the spread of both progressive theory and primarily Sharia law and Islamic fundamentalism, the Shiite brand, throughout the planet. As long as Israel, this is the last dot, as long as Israel and America exist in their current form, folks, Sharia, and by the way, this goes in with immigration because it weakens current form. Sharia, Islamic fundamentalism, and the communist ideals of progressivism cannot, in the end, succeed. Israel and the United States, and to a slightly lesser degree, Europe, which is already, far down the road of being taken over from within, to the extent we exist, the plans that are called for in the 12th Prophet brand of radical Islam cannot be fulfilled. Pretty sobering. And it's an incredible set of dots. I hope I laid them out so that you could follow them. There's others. But I'll tell you what. I really suggest that you read these three books. Buy them used. Check the links out. I've also posted in the write-up, or my producers have, some links to previous shows I've done with national figures such as Claire Lopez, who are experts at Islamic radical thought. And drop me a line. I like, tell me what you think. I mean, am I off base here? Am I drawing the lines in my mind wrong? Do you draw the lines differently? Is there something I'm missing? Is it absolutely inconceivable to you? All right. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the right side. Have a great Saturday. Think about it.